Chapter 28. Assign me at present, and with a philosophical it needs no exposure. It may be sufficient here to say, that it forms one of an infinite series of mistakes which arise in the path of reason through her propensity for seeking truth in detail. Tilde 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 end of text tilde 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 footnotes Marie Rog T. asterisk 1 upon the original publication of Arai Rajat, the footnotes now appended were considered unnecessary, but the lapse of several years since the tragedy upon which the tale is based renders it expedient to give them, and also to say a few words in explanation of the general design. A young girl, Mary Cecilia Rogers, was murdered in the vicinity of New York, and, although her death occasioned an intense and long-enduring excitement, the mystery attending it had remained unsolved at the period when the present paper was written and published, November 1842. Herein, under pretense of relating the fate of a Parisian grisette, the author has followed in minute detail the essential, while merely paralleling the inessential facts of the real murder of Mary Rogers. Thus all argument founded upon the fiction is applicable to the truth, and the investigation of the truth was the object. The history of Marie Rogat was composed at a distance from the scene of the atrocity, and with no other means of investigation than the newspapers afforded. Thus much escaped the writer of which he could have availed himself had he been upon the spot and visited the localities. It may not be improper to record, nevertheless, that the confessions of two persons, one of them the Madame Delic of the narrative, made, at different periods, long subsequent to the publication, confirmed, in full, not only the general conclusion, but absolutely all the chief hypothetical details by which that conclusion was attained. Asterisk 2, the nom de plume of von Hardenberg. Asterisk 3, Nassau Street. Asterisk 4, Anderson. Asterisk 5, the Hudson. Asterisk 6, Weehawken. Asterisk 7, Payne. Asterisk 8, Cromelin. Asterisk 9, the New York Mercury. Asterisk 10, the New York Rother Jonathan, edited by H. Hastings Weld Esquire. Asterisk 11, New York Ornal of Commerce. Asterisk 12, Philadelphia Saturday Evening Post, edited by C. 1. Peterson Esquire. Asterisk 13, Adam. Asterisk 14, C. Erders in the Rue Morgue. Asterisk 15, the New York Commercial Advertiser, edited by Colonel Stone. Asterisk 16, theory based on the qualities of an object will prevent its being unfolded according to its objects, and he who arranges topics in reference to their causes will cease to value them according to their results. Thus the jurisprudence of every nation will show that, when law becomes a science and a system, it ceases to be justice. The errors into which a blind devotion to principles of classification has led the common law will be seen by observing how often the legislature has been obliged to come forward to restore the equity its scheme had lost. Lander. Asterisk 17, New York Express. Asterisk 18, New York Herald. Asterisk 19, New York Courier and Inquirer. Asterisk 20, Menace was one of the parties originally suspected and arrested, but discharged through total lack of evidence. Asterisk 21, New York Courier and Inquirer. Asterisk 22, New York Evening Post. Asterisk 23, of the magazine in which the article was originally published. The Balloon Hoax, Astounding News by Express, via Norfolk. The Atlantic crossed in 3 days. Signal triumph of Mr. Monk Mason's flying machine. Arrival at Sullivan's Island, near Charlestown, S. C., of Mr. Mason, Mr. Robert Holland, Mr. Henson, Mr. Harrison Ainsworth, and 4 others, in the steering balloon, Victoria, after a passage of 75 hours from land to land. Full particulars of the voyage. The subjoined Jew desperate with the preceding heading in magnificent capitals, well interspersed with notes of admiration, was originally published, as matter of fact, in the New York Sun, a daily newspaper, and there fully subserved the purpose of creating indigestible element for the quidnincs during the few hours intervening between a couple of the Charleston mails. The rush for the Olé paper which had the news was something beyond even the prodigious. And, in fact, if, as some assert, the Victoria did not absolutely accomplish the voyage recorded, it will be difficult to assign a reason why she should not have accomplished it. The great problem is at length solved. The air, as well as the earth and the ocean, has been subdued by science, and will become a common and convenient highway for mankind. The Atlantic has been actually crossed in a balloon. And this too without difficulty, without any great apparent danger, with thorough control of the machine, and in the inconceivably brief period of 75 hours from shore to shore. By the energy of an agent at Charleston, SC, we are enabled to be the first to furnish the public with a detailed account of this most extraordinary voyage, which was performed between Saturday, the 6th instant, at 11 a. M.M., and 2 p.m., on Tuesday, the 9th instant, by Sir Everard Bringhurst, Mr. Osborne, a nephew of Lord Bentinck's, Mr. Monkmason and Mr. Robert Holland, the well-known Ronauts, Mr. Harrison Ainsworth, author of Ack Shepherd, and C. Semicolon and Mr. Henson, the projector of the late unsuccessful flying machine with two seamen from Woolwich in all, eight persons. The particulars furnished below may be relied on as authentic and accurate in every respect, as, with a slight exception, they are copied verbatim from the joint diaries of Mr. Monkmason and Mr. Harrison Ainsworth, to whose politeness our agent is also indebted for much verbal information respecting the balloon itself, its construction, and other matters of interest. The only alteration in the MS. received, has been made for the purpose of throwing the hurried account of our agent, Mr. Forsyth, into a connected and intelligible form. The balloon. Woe very decided failures. Of late those of Mr. Henson and Sir George Cayley had much weakened the public interest in the subject of aerial navigation. Mr. Henson's scheme, which at first was considered very feasible even by men of science, was founded upon the principle of an inclined plane, started from an eminence by an extrinsic force, applied and continued by the revolution of impinging vanes, in form and number resembling the vanes of a windmill. But, in all the experiments made with models at the Adelaide Gallery, it was found that the operation of these fans not only did not propel the machine, but actually impeded its flight. The only propelling force it ever exhibited was the mere impetus acquired from the descent of the inclined plane, and this impetus carried the machine farther when the vanes were at rest than when they were in motion, a fact which sufficiently demonstrates their inutility. And in the absence of the propelling, which was also the sustaining power, the whole fabric would necessarily descend. This consideration led Sir George Cayley to think only of adapting a propeller to some machine, having of itself an independent power of support, in a word, to a balloon. The idea, however, being novel, or original, with Sir George, only so far as regards the mode of its application to practice. He exhibited a model of his invention at the Polytechnic Institution. The propelling principle, or power, was here, also, applied to interrupted surfaces, or vanes, put in revolution. These vanes were four in number, but were found entirely ineffectual in moving the balloon, or in aiding its ascending power. The whole project was thus a complete failure. It was at this juncture that Mr. Monkmason, whose voyage from Dover to Weilburg in the balloon, Nassau, occasioned so much excitement in 1837, conceived the idea of employing the principle of the Archimedean screw for the purpose of propulsion through the air, rightly attributing the failure of Mr. Henson's scheme, and of Sir George Cayley's, to the interruption of surface in the independent vanes. He made the first public experiment at Willis's rooms, but afterward removed his model to the Adelaide Gallery. Ike Sir George Cayley's balloon, his own, was an ellipsoid. Its length was 13 feet 6 inches, height 6 feet 8 inches. It contained about 320 cubic feet of gas, which, if pure hydrogen, would support 21 pounds upon its first inflation, before the gas has time to deteriorate or escape. The weight of the whole machine and apparatus was 17 pounds, leaving about 4 pounds to spare. Beneath the center of the balloon was a frame of light wood, about 9 feet long, and rigged onto the balloon itself with a network in the customary manner. From this framework was suspended a wicker basket or car. The screw consists of an axis of hollow brass tube, 18 inches in length, through which, upon a semi-spiral inclined at 15 degrees, pass a series of steel wire radii, 2 feet long, and thus projecting a foot on either side. These radii are connected at the outer extremities by two bands of flattened wire, the whole in this manner forming the framework of the screw, which is completed by a covering of oiled silk cut in two gores, and tightened so as to present a tolerably uniform surface. At each end of its axis, this screw is supported by pillars of hollow brass tube descending from the hoop. In the lower ends of these tubes are holes in which the pivots of the axis revolve. From the end of the axis, which is next the car, proceeds a shaft of steel, connecting the screw with the pinion of a piece of spring machinery fixed in the car. By the operation of this spring, the screw is made to revolve with great rapidity, communicating a progressive motion to the whole. By means of the rudder, the machine was readily turned in any direction. The spring was of great power, compared with its dimensions, being capable of raising 45 pounds upon a barrel of 4 inches diameter, after the first turn, and gradually increasing as it was wound up. It weighed, altogether, 8 pounds 6 ounces. The rudder was a light frame of cane covered with silk, shaped somewhat like a battledore, and was about 3 feet long, and at the widest, 1 foot. Its weight was about 2 ounces. It could be turned flat, and directed upwards or downwards, as well as to the right or left, and thus enabled the ronaut to transfer the resistance of the air which in an inclined position it must generate in its passage, to any side upon which he might desire to act, thus determining the balloon in the opposite direction. His model, which, through want of time, we have necessarily described in an imperfect manner, was put in action at the Adelaide Gallery, where it accomplished a velocity of 5 miles per hour, although, strange to say, it excited very little interest in comparison with the previous complex machine of Mr. Henson, so resolute is the world to despise anything which carries with it an air of simplicity. To accomplish the great desideratum of royal navigation, it was very generally supposed that some exceedingly complicated application must be made of some unusually profound principle in dynamics. Oh, well satisfied, however, was Mr. Mason of the ultimate success of his invention, that he determined to construct immediately, if possible, a balloon of sufficient capacity to test the question by a voyage of some extent, the original design being to cross the British Channel, as before, in the Nassau balloon. To carry out his views, he solicited and obtained the patronage of Sir Everard Bringhurst and Mr. Osborne, two gentlemen well known for scientific acquirement, and especially for the interest they have exhibited in the progress of Rostation. The project, at the desire of Mr. Osborne, was kept a profound secret from the public, the only persons entrusted with the design being those actually engaged in the construction of the machine, which was built under the superintendence of Mr. Mason, Mr. Holland, Sir Everard Bringhurst, and Mr. Osborne, at the seat of the latter gentleman near Penstruthal, in Wales. Mr. Henson, accompanied by his friend Mr. Ainsworth, was admitted to a private view of the balloon on Saturday last, when the two gentlemen made final arrangements to be included in the adventure. We are not informed for what reason the two seamen were also included in the party, but, In the course of a day or two, we shall put our readers in possession of the minutest particulars respecting this extraordinary voyage. The balloon is composed of silk, varnished with the liquid gum caoutchouc. It is of vast dimensions, containing more than 40,000 cubic feet of gas. But as coal gas was employed in place of the more expensive and inconvenient hydrogen, the supporting power of the machine, when fully inflated, and immediately after inflation, is not more than about 2,500 pounds. The coal gas is not only much less costly, but is easily procured and managed. For its introduction into common use for purposes of aerostation, we are indebted to Mr. Charles Green. Up to his discovery, the process of inflation was not only exceedingly expensive, but uncertain. 2, and even 3 days, have frequently been wasted in futile attempts to procure a sufficiency of hydrogen to fill a balloon, from which it had great tendency to escape, owing to its extreme subtlety, and its affinity for the surrounding atmosphere. In a balloon sufficiently perfect to retain its contents of coal gas unaltered, in quantity or amount, for 6 months, an equal quantity of hydrogen could not be maintained in equal purity for 6 weeks. The supporting power being estimated at 2,500 pounds, and the united weights of the party amounting only to about 1,200, there was left a surplus of 1,300, of which again 1,200 was exhausted by ballast, arranged in bags of different sizes, with their respective weights marked upon them by cordage, barometers, telescopes, barrels containing provision for a fortnight, water casks, cloaks, carpet bags, and various other indispensable matters, including a coffee warmer, contrived for warming coffee by means of slack lime, so as to dispense altogether with fire, if it should be judged prudent to do so. All these articles, with the exception of the ballast and a few trifles, were suspended from the hoop overhead. The car is much smaller and lighter, in proportion, than the one appended to the model. It is formed of a light wicker, and is wonderfully strong, for so frail-looking a machine. Its rim is about 4 feet deep. The rudder is also very much larger, in proportion, than that of the model, and the screw is considerably smaller. The balloon is furnished besides with a grapnel, and a guide rope, which latter is of the most indispensable importance. A few words, in explanation, will here be necessary for such of our readers as are not conversant with the details of aerostation. As soon as the balloon quits the earth, it is subjected to the influence of many circumstances tending to create a difference in its weight, augmenting or diminishing its ascending power. For example, there may be a deposition of dew upon the silk, to the extent, even, of several hundred pounds. Ballast has then to be thrown out, or the machine may descend. This ballast being discarded, and a clear sunshine evaporating the dew, and at the same time expanding the gas in the silk, the whole will again rapidly. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.